Would you disagree that the world seems to be upside down right now? What is wrong is right, and what is right is wrong. How do we live our lives in a time like this? Everything, I cannot imagine the way things are now if I had tried to a couple years ago. It is just so crazy in the world. I want us to talk about how the church is to function in a time like this. Before we get into the lesson, I want to again welcome everybody that's here. It's good to see this many that are able to be out. We need to be praying for the work here. We need to be praying for the Lord's work everywhere. There are a lot of congregations dealing with health problems, with attitudes, and again, just thinking of how things have changed so much. People are looking for more and more excuses not to come to services. We need to understand this is where God expects us to be as we remember that great sacrifice that was made for us. I want us to begin in Acts chapter 17 and verse 5 this morning. But the Jews who were not persuaded, becoming envious, took some of the evil men from the marketplace, gathering a mob, set all the city in an uproar, and attacked the house of Jason, and sought to bring them out to the people. But when they did not find them, they dragged Jason and some brethren to the rulers of the city, crying out, "These who have turned the world upside down have come here too." So we see this phrase here where the world is turned upside down. Friends, we've got to understand that when we stand for Christ, the world is going to stand against us. In John chapter 15 and verse 18, "If the world hates you, know that it hated me before it hated you. If you were of the world would love its own. Yet because you are not of the world, but I chose you out of the world, therefore the world hates you. Remember that the word that I said to you, 'A servant is not greater than his master,' if they persecuted me, they will also persecute you. If they kept my word, they will keep yours also. But all these things they will do to you for my name's sake, because they do not know him who sent me. If I had not come and spoken to them, they would have no sin, but now they have no excuse for their sin. He who hates me hates my Father also. If I did not come among them, the works which no one else did, they would have no sin. But now they have seen and also hated both me and my Father. But this happened that the word might be fulfilled, which is written in their law, 'They hated me without a cause.'" So if we stand with Christ, the world is going to hate us because the world hates Christ. The world hates God. However, the world, it is upside down, but it's not upside down because of godly men like this accusation in Acts 17, 5 and 6. It's upside down because of the evil that's in the world. And it's up to godly men and godly women, it's up to you and me to turn it right side up again. We have to have a different aim in life. I was trying to think of a way to come up with some slides for this. I took a map of the United States and I turned it upside down and put some words upside down. And when I'd look at that, it was just too uncomfortable to look at. It wasn't right. So I used a nice background, these mountains and trees. But even when you turn that upside down, it's just not right. It's not right. And it's not right that the world is upside down. And thinking of the aims of the world, it's hard for me to imagine until I see it just how evil and rotten some people are in the world. A month ago, I showed you a slide of the ad that I put on Craigslist for Bible study. An open Bible, inviting people to contact us. We have a Wednesday night Bible study. If you can't make that, we can arrange any time to study with you. I got somebody responded to that, and so it's in this decoded scrambled email. So I sent him back with a phone number to call to contact to set something up. Didn't hear anything. I got another response from that, and when I opened that one up, there was a picture of our ad, and there was profanity that it was on there. And I don't know if somebody hacked it and put it on there or what. I have no idea how to do any of that. There are people that do. And then I got an email the other day, and it said that our ad was flagged and removed. It was removed for violating terms of use. Violating terms of use. Just advertising a Bible study. And there were other Bible studies that, there was one other one that was posted south of town, and it had about a dozen pictures, people eating and talking and people with horses and all kinds of things, and it was called a Bible study. But we just put out an open Bible and invite people to study the Bible, and the ad is taken down. The world is upside down, friends. It's upside down. We need to put it right side up. But we've got to understand that whatever we do, if we are doing something for the Lord, we are going to meet opposition. And if we aren't meeting opposition, we may not be taking a stand for the Lord. What is the purpose and aims of the people of the world? They want more and more materialism and pleasure. They're filled with pride. They are filled with they want the fullness of bread. They want the abundance of idleness. In Ezekiel 16, 49 and 50, look, this was the iniquity of your sister Sodom. She and her daughter had pride, fullness of food, abundance of idleness. Neither did she strengthen the hand of the poor and the needy. And they were haughty and committed abomination before me. Therefore, I took them away as I saw fit. This sounds like when you turn on the TV today or when you read the newspaper, these things that are going on. These proud people, people that are doing nothing, abundance of idleness, haughty, committing abominations. They want to live however they want to live. And that's nothing new. It goes back to Judges 21:25. In those days, there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in their own eyes. And that is true, and it's not true. There was a king in Israel. It was God. They didn't want to recognize God as their king. So everybody just did whatever they wanted to. Everybody, whatever they wanted to do was right. They want, people today want rules and values that can be broken as soon as they're made. They want a selfish lifestyle. They want to engage in all kinds of sexual immorality and unlawful lust. They want to ignore and reject God's laws on sex and marriage. And you contrast that with the aims of people of God. What do we want to do? We want to obey and please God. Hebrews 5:9, having been perfected, he became the author of eternal salvation to all who obey him. In John chapter 6 and verse 38, for I have come down from heaven not to do my own will, but the will of him who sent me. This is the will of the Father who sent me, that of all he has given me, I should lose nothing, but should raise it up the last day. And this is the will of him who sent me, that everyone who sees the Son and believes in him may have everlasting life, and I will raise him up at the last day. It's two extremes. The people of the world want to do any and everything to satisfy their own selfish desires. The people of God want to show the rest of the world who Christ is and what he can do for us. 1 Peter 4:2 says that he no longer should live the rest of the time in the flesh of the lust of men, but for the will of God. We've got to stop blending in like the world. Stop living the lust of the flesh. We've got to live for God. We must seek the kingdom first. Matthew 6:33. We want to have a lifestyle that's in harmony with God's will. We do not want to be conformed to this world like it speaks about in Romans 12, 1 and 2. We don't want to be conformed. We want to be transformed. But again, you see things going on all around about us. And do we stay quiet and blend in, or do we speak up? We've got to decide on our own what we can do and how we can present Christ to the world. We believe that marriage is a God-planned relationship for happiness, one man and one woman. And we see the world trying to destroy the Bible doctrine on the family. They make it anything they want to make it. We believe that God has laws prohibiting a number of things. We believe that the church and the world cannot exist together. We can't let the worldliness come into the church. We are holy. We are sanctified. We are separate. We are set apart. And a lot of the places out there, this is getting fuzzy and it's eroding. And I heard somebody say recently, well, we'll just get people from the world to come in and then we'll teach them after we get them in. Well, if you don't teach them before they come in, you're going to have some problems, because they aren't going to want to give up some of the things that they believe and they practice. So the purposes of the world and the purposes of God are at opposite ends. They are at opposing ends. And we should expect the world to hate us. If we take the idea, the mindset that the world's going to love us, it's just going to cause a lot of conflict in our mind. Back to what I read in John, we should expect it. But wouldn't it be nice, though, if we could just leave all of the headaches of this world and not have to deal with that? But friends, that's not what Christ wants for us. When we read the prayer of Christ in John chapter 17, beginning at verse 14, I have given them your word, and the world has hated them because they are not of the world, just as I am not of the world. I do not pray that you should take them out of the world, but that you should keep them from the evil one. They are not of the world, just as I am not of the world. Sanctify them by your truth. Your word is truth. So we are living in an evil world, and Christ is saying he did not pray to God, just go ahead and take my followers out of this world so they don't have to go through this. He didn't pray that. I do not pray that you should take them out of the world, but that you should keep them from the evil one. We have a purpose here. God has us here at this time for a reason. There's so much evil going on in the world, turning it upside down. Who's going to turn it right side up? Is that the government's job to do that? Some people will say it's the government's job. Some people will say it's this or that. How do you change a person? How do you change a nation? It's one person at a time. One person at a time. We are to be the light of the world. We are to be the salt of the earth. We are to have influence on other people. And again, there's a mindset, well, that's not my job. Friends, that is definitely our job. And I'm not saying that we should do anything other than what God's word says to do. And we should let our light so shine that others may see our good works and give glory to the Father. So we believe the church is in the world, but not of the world. And this is a concept that's hard to get in some people's minds. They think that, you know, I'm a Christian, and I'm a Christian here, and I can go to the bar and be a Christian, and I can go to this club, and I can go here, and I can stay home, and I can do whatever I want, and I'm still a Christian. No, that's not what God says. And there's a danger of being pulled into the world and worshiping in that mindset. That's called idolatry. Idolatry. And we think of idols in the Old Testament where they would take a tree and cut it down and carve an image, or take a stone and carve it and make something out of it. But idolatry is worshiping something other than God. And a lot of times it's worshiping ourselves instead of God. 2 Corinthians 6:14, "Be ye not unequally yoked together with unbelievers, for what fellowship hath righteousness with unrighteousness, and what communion hath light with darkness? What concord hath Christ with Belial, or what part hath he that believeth with an infidel? And what agreement hath the temple of God with idols? For ye are the temple of the living God. As God has said, I will dwell in them and walk in them. I will be their God, and they shall be my people. Wherefore, come out from among them, and be ye separate, saith the Lord, and touch not the unclean thing, and I will receive you." We are the temple of God. We are to be holy. We are to come out of the world. The world is just too near and dear to too many people today. But again, that's nothing new. It's been that way since the beginning of time. James wrote about this in James chapter 4 and verse 4. And what does he call the people? He says, "Ye adulterers and adulteresses, know ye not that friendship of the world is enmity with God? Whosoever therefore will be a friend of the world is the enemy of God." You see, we are married to God. We are the bride of Christ. We can't be the bride of Christ and the bride of Satan, or then we become an adulterer or an adulteress. So we must be different from the world. And that means we have to understand, and I think most of us, we are of the age that we understand these things. We need to focus on our children. We need to focus on our grandchildren. We need to focus on the young ones before their minds are twisted by others, that we are going to be the minority in the world. Matthew 22:14, "For many are called, but few are chosen." Ephesians 1:4, "As he hath chosen us in him before the foundation of the world, that we should be holy and without blame before him in love." We're going to be the minority. If we blend in with the crowd, we aren't standing out as a Christian. We're going to be unpopular. We've got to expect that. We're going to be unpopular. People aren't going to call us up to go out every Friday night and Saturday night and go here and there and do things with us. They know we would not approve of those things. Matthew 10:22, "And ye shall be hated of all men for my name's sake, but he that endureth to the end shall be saved." We need to understand that we're going to be misunderstood and misrepresented. Acts 28:22, "But we desire to hear of thee what thou thinkest, for as concerning this sect, we know that everywhere it is spoken against us." You tell somebody you're from the Church of Christ, and oh, you're that group over there that believes this and that. We're going to be misrepresented. It means we will constantly be on the defensive. Philippians 1:17, "But the other of love, knowing that I am set for the defense of the gospel." Paul was ready to defend the gospel all the time. Friends, we've got to be ready to defend the gospel all the time. If we don't defend it, what's going to happen? People with all of these other religious views and agnostic views are going to come in and persuade people to think like they do. Jude 3, Beloved, when I give all diligence to write to you of the common salvation, it was needful for me to write unto you and exhort you that you should earnestly contend for the faith which was once delivered for the saints. We need to contend. So we're going to be different from the world. We're going to be a minority. We're going to be unpopular. We're going to be misunderstood and misrepresented. We will constantly be defending God's word. And the word, the world, also, in this upside down world, it tries to get us to constantly compromise the church and its purity. It tries to destroy it. And that's nothing new. But we see it so much today. And it seems like the speed of all of these things has just accelerated in the last so many years. When I was growing up, you know, the big issues were a kitchen in the church, whether or not you can support orphans' homes or this or that, a handful of things. And now you see churches and even churches of Christ that will accept and do anything, everything, have women up front preaching, have all kinds of social programs, have any and everything imaginable. They try to get the church to compromise on its purity. Can we read of any places like that in the New Testament? New Testament is full of them also. The church at Corinth in 1 Corinthians 5, 1 through 5, there was a man living with his father's wife. And when Paul wrote to him, he said, even the Gentiles wouldn't do something like that. And you're puffed up. You're letting this man live with his stepmother. The church at Thyatira in Revelation 2, 20, I've got a few things against thee, because thou sufferest that woman Jezebel, which calleth herself a prophetess, to teach and to seduce my servants to commit fornication and to eat things sacrificed to idols. The church at Laodicea, it was indifferent. It was lukewarm. God said he wanted, I will spew thee out of my mouth. That means that church made him sick to his stomach. And we forget about these things. We forget about these churches. The church at Pergamon, Revelation 2:14, but I've got a few things against thee, because thou hast there them that hold the doctrine of Balaam, who taught Balak to cast a stumbling block before the children of Israel, to eat things sacrificed to idols, to commit fornication. So hast thou also them that hold the doctrine of the Nicolaitans, which thing I hate. And he says, repent, or else I will come unto thee quickly, and will fight against them, and with the sword of my mouth. And what do we say? Oh, we need to be more inclusive. We need to have a diversity of people here. We just need to let everybody come in and do what they want. Don't be so legalistic. Friends, the world is upside down. And that upside down attitude is coming into the church. The membership in the church, in some churches, has grown to embrace many people not converted to what the gospel teaches the church is. They don't understand the church. They don't understand the responsibility to the church. And again, I pray for the church, because there are so many people out there. Social media is part of it. You can't blame social media. Social media doesn't make you do anything. You have to choose yourself to do it. But there are people that are content to sit at home and watch a service and listen to a podcast from this preacher and a podcast to that preacher, and I think I'll go here this week and I'll go there that next week. And they don't understand the local congregation, and we have a responsibility to the local congregation and the work here and what we are to do. And they think that the church is like some cyber church. And the church that we were at 2 weeks ago in Kentucky, and as I've said, they're a very strong group, and they record parts of their service, and they will show those, but they never record a whole service from beginning to end because they don't want somebody to get the idea that it's okay to stay at home and that's worship on the first day of the week. Corinthians tells us when you come together as the church, because we could all come together and go to a ball game, that's not the church, but you come together as the church, and the third one, you come together in one place. And that's when he gets into the talking about the acts of worship and the assembly and things that go on. I was reading something this week where people were talking and arguing about the collection, and some people think, you know, you can give any time you want to. Give it on PayPal. Some churches will put a link on their website to pay that way. And some person was arguing from 1 Corinthians 16 that when you lay something aside on the first day of the week, that was talking about laying aside at home. You set it aside at home, and that's the mindset today. Oh, you don't even have to go. We'll just set something aside at home. And the person addressing that argument was, why would you lay it aside at home when you're coming together on the first day of the week? You're coming together on the first day of the week to worship God, to remember His death, burial, and resurrection. You worship Him that way. Why would you worship with your giving at home? Many people are not converted to understand what the church is and to do what it is to do and to be. People are not converted to do what we are supposed to do and to be what we are supposed to be. Some people think, I'm baptized, that's fine, I'm saved. No, that's the beginning. That's the beginning. That adds us to the family. We have to honor the Father. Some people, the world gets upside down and the church gets upside down because some people will not preach what the Bible tells us to preach. And again, as I like to keep going over Acts 8, where Philip preached the things concerning the kingdom, which is the church, the name of Christ, which is His authority, and men and women were both baptized, which is His baptism. We need to preach those three things. Paul told Timothy in 2 Timothy 4, verses 2 through 5, preach the word. Preach the word. You can go to a lot of places today, and they don't even crack open a Bible, or they'll have one or two verses. They'll have a 30-minute talk. You'll hear verses in 5 minutes of it, and the rest of it's talk. Preach the word. Be ready in season and out of season. Convince, rebuke, exhort with all long-suffering and patience and teaching. For the time will come when they will not endure sound doctrine, but according to their own desires, because they have itching ears, they will heap up for themselves teachers, and they will turn their ears away from the truth and be turned aside to fables. But you be watchful in all things, endure afflictions, do the work of an evangelist, fulfill your ministry. So God's people are to come out and be separate from the world. 2 Corinthians 6:17. Years ago, and it seems like it goes in cycles, the church makes a lot of growth, then it does not. Numbers decline, it makes a lot of growth. Again, we cannot control the growth, but we can control our activity in preaching God's word. And when the church grows, we want it to grow based on the authority of God. We want it to grow based on the authority of God, not using these social things to get people to come in. We've got to please God, not please the world. Galatians 1:10, "For do I now persuade men or God? Or do I seek to please men? For if I still pleased men, I would not be a bondservant of Christ." See, if we are bondservants of God, if we are slaves of God, if God is our master, He's the one that we want to please. Doesn't matter if we aren't going to please the world. We got to get that in our head. It's going to hate us. It's going to hate us. We've got to be willing to pay the price. Luke chapter 14. "Whoever does not bear his cross and come after me cannot be my disciple." If you're intending to build a tower, does not one sit down and first count the cost, whether he has enough to finish it? Lest after he has laid the foundation, he's not able to finish. All who see it begin to mock him, saying, "This man began to build a tower and was not able to finish it." Or what king going to make war against another king does not sit down first and consider what he is able with 10,000 to meet him who comes against him with 20,000? Or else while the other is still a great way off, he sends delegation and asks conditions of peace. And these are two examples that make it so clear we've got to count the cost. And again, I think all of us here have, but we've got to look at the cost from here to when we die, and we've got to get this across to our kids, to our grandchildren, because if we don't, what's the church going to be? We've got a generation, you leave the church out of it for a minute, you've got a generation that's growing up that they are being taught anything under the sun, history that is being rewritten, ethics that there's nothing ethical about it. They're being taught anything under the sun, and they are going to think whatever they hear from any preacher, well, that's fine too. No, friends, we've got to get young people to see the price that must be paid. We've got to get the world turned right side up again. How do we do that? We do that individually. I have to do that as I can. I have to set the example. I have to tell as many people as I can about God. I have to serve Christ. Matthew 6:24, "No one can serve two masters. He'll either hate the one and love the other, or else he'll be loyal to the one and despise the other." You cannot serve God and mammon. We can't play the game. We can't be a Christian on Sunday morning for an hour and then live like the devil the rest of the week. And we must develop a biblical mindset. We must accept to be persecuted in this life. We must expect to face trials. We must expect to be made fun of. And friends, if we aren't, if none of that happens to us, I've got to ask myself, am I doing my job as a Christian? If I just blend in and everybody thinks I'm like them, I'm not doing what I ought to be doing. Friends, again, we've got to be salt and light of the world. We are the agents of change. You hear so many people say, "Vote for me and I'll change things." All they'll change is taking more money out of your wallet. We want to change people's hearts. We want to change people's minds. Do we have the power to do that? We do. We've got the power of the Word. This is the greatest power there is. The greatest power there is. With the Word and with prayer to God and with someone seeing Christ living in us, we can change someone else. If that isn't the case, none of us would be here. None of us would be here worshiping God this morning because somebody made a change in our lives. Friends, do you need to make a change in your life this morning? Do you need to obey the gospel? Has the world come into your life and you need prayers? If we can assist you in any way, we invite you to come forward now as we stand and sing.
All will be gladness when